Welcome back to QT with JC. That's Quarantine with Jesus, if you didn't know. I'm Max Linville, campus minister at the University of St. Thomas in Houston, Texas. And here today with Nicole Abadie, director of campus ministry, and Darnell Miller, Catholic Outreach. We have a great show for you today. Today we are going to be talking about discernment. Yes, discernment is figuring out if you should be a priest or nun. That's it. We're kidding. But it's more than that. It's understanding and answering God's call in all aspects of your life. So today's episode is going to look a little different. We have it split up into three sections. In the first part, we're going to be hearing from Nicole, just talking about a discernment story and how maybe where she thought she was going to end up is not where she ended up. But in that discernment, she really found where she was being called. And then we're bringing in an interview with someone very close to the Bastillion community here at the University of St. Thomas. And we're going to be having an interview with him and learning more about his experience with discernment and how he's being called to live the rest of his life. And then the part three, it's called Who's That Saint? And we're going to be sharing just some random saints and just kind of exposing saints to you and how they live their lives and their interaction with God. So thank you for being here. Part one. Nicole is looking to go to college, and what does that mean? How do you decide where you're going to end up for 4 years after high school? So she's going to share a story about her discernment to figure out where she was going to go to college.
So taking y'all back about 11 years to my senior year of high school, I had no clue where I was supposed to go to college. Still sort of thinking through different majors, different possibilities of career choices. I ended up applying to 10 different colleges and universities, 7 in-state and 3 out-of-state. I ended up getting into all of them, and I had, among the 10, my ranking of, you know, which are my top 2 to 3 dream schools, and which was that college that my parents made me apply to because it was really close to home. About halfway through my senior year, my dad lost his job unexpectedly. And so a big part of that discernment process or that decision-making process was which was the most financially feasible for me, for our family. And so it ended up, I chose the school that offered me the best scholarship. So the one ultimately that was the cheapest option out of all 10. That happened to be number 10 out of 10 on my list. I was not excited about that as a possibility. And I fought that decision for a very long time. I waited until the last possible day to make my decision for all of them. And I remember praying and just being very anxious and, yeah, not knowing where God was in all of this. And then that day that I made the decision, to go to my 10th choice school, I remember just being flooded with peace. And it was a gradual process after that. But I began to see all of the ways that God was working through this particular school and that particular community. From everything to choosing my major that, you know, my top 2 to 3 dream schools didn't offer. The spiritual community that I found there, the religious congregation that I encountered, and that formed me really well. That particular school and that particular community affected where I went to grad school, what my ultimate career choice was after I went through, you know, the 1 and 2 different sort of crises during college of what am I going to do with the rest of my life? And years later, ultimately, connections from those communities led to meeting the man who is now my spouse. And so with that story, I just am reminded that God's will surprised me in the best way. And his providence was always there. And every turn on that journey was for a greater purpose that I had no idea about at the time.
All right, part two. So in this part, we're going to be talking with a friend of ours. He's moving into ordination. And Darnell decided to have an interview with him and learn a little bit more about his experience of becoming a Basilian, and just the path that really, the path that he went on to get there. So Darnell is going to open this whole conversation up and kind of share with us.
So did y'all ever think about joining the religious life?
I did very briefly. I looked at a few different religious communities' websites and just sort of pondered it. But from a very, like, from a very young age, I definitely felt called to marriage.
Yeah, and then for me, I definitely did. The Passionist Order, after I did my year of service in Jamaica, the Passionist Order really spoke to me a lot. So I spent, did a couple of like discernment, vocation discernment things with them. And after all those experiences, I just didn't feel called to it. Part of it though, is that I do like that Passionist charism is still like deep within my heart. So there is still a way for me to participate, but definitely went through that whole process. And I remember a quote from my professor in college. He's like, yeah, every good Catholic discerns being religious. So I was like, okay, that's good then. So
yeah, I did a little bit as well. I went so far as to live with some priest out in Arizona for a bit while I was doing missionary work. And I think what I got from that whole experience was that I shouldn't be a diocesan priest. They were all diocesan. But it was a cool learning experience. And I think the biggest takeaway I got was it really humanized the idea of a priest for me. I think so often we see them on a pedestal as something else, but like I saw them for their flaws, that they're short tempered, that they struggle with things. Like, and I think that's like a beautiful experience to have and really allowed me to appreciate them for who they are in a different sense than I could before that. But anyway, I'm getting off topic. The reason I asked is because we have some good news. The Basilians have another priest who's going to be joining their order pretty soon. And I think that's like super, super exciting.
Yeah, I'm so pumped.
Yeah, his name is Deacon Eduardo.
Hi, my name is Deacon Eduardo Rivera.
He's a Basilian already, technically.
I'm a member of the Congregation of St. Basil, the Basilian Fathers.
But he's being ordained a priest in that order. Right now he's a deacon. He's taking that next step to being a full priest. And what I think is really cool about his journey is how he recognized and answered God's call.
What do you mean?
My family would go to church every Sunday, but I wouldn't say growing up that I was like a super, I wasn't one of those people who was like pretending to celebrate Mass when I was a little kid. Like I wasn't practicing and all that stuff. I never imagined of being a priest.
So he wanted to be an attorney growing up.
When I was in high school, I wanted to be an attorney. So I came to UST. I started studying international studies. I wanted to be an attorney. I wanted to work with the Foreign Service, work as an ambassador, something like that.
But God moves in mysterious ways.
But then my very first day at UST, I went to daily Mass, and that's where I met Father Mike, and he immediately on the spot offered me a job in campus ministry. So I was like, okay, well, why not? It's a job right off the bat, some money to help pay for school, so why not? So I started taking the job, and like growing up, people had told me, have you ever thought about being a priest? And no, not really. It was in the back of my mind. But then the more and more time I spent working in campus ministry, working with Father Mike, having lunch and meeting with the priests, praying with them over at the Basilian House on campus at UST, that's how I started to grow more and more in discerning my vocation. And I started to feel God calling me a little bit at a time.
The turning point moment came during the fall semester of his freshman year when he attended a Basilian vocation retreat.
And I didn't think anything of it at the time. I was like, I was going to go with one of my friends who was really serious about thinking about the priesthood. And he's like, I don't really know anybody else there. Can you go with me? It's going to be kind of awkward. So I said, you know what? I'm going to be a good friend. I'm going to go and help you. I'm going to support you. So I went. And then a couple weeks later, I ended up taking the first step and joining the Basilians. And my friend didn't for like another like 5 years. So it's funny how it works, but I took that very first step of being an associate with Basilians.
So from what I know, the process of being a priest differs depending on whether they are diocesan or if they're part of a particular order. Nicole, do you know if there's any similarities between these and like anything that they need to do in order to become novitiates or to undergo the entire priest process?
So in any religious community, you start by doing what's called a postulant year, where you live and share life with the community for 1 year. And it's that beginning initial discernment.
You're kind of like learning the ropes, getting time to pray with the priests, to eat with them, just to talk to them, like just to see how their daily life goes.
From there, you participate in a novitiate year. That year typically is a year that's set apart from the public. It's a year of intense prayer,
which is kind of like a spiritual boot camp. So we had like a set schedule from like 6:30 in the morning all the way till 10 o'clock at night. You're praying, you're meditating, you're waking up, you're reading books about the spiritual life, about the history of the Basilians. It's a very structured year. And in that year, you're really trying to discern if you're called to, first off, religious life with the Basilians, and then secondly, if you're called to the priesthood.
We actually have several Basilian novices right now, and they'll conclude their novitiate this August, which is super exciting. From there, they usually enter into formal theological studies, and then they will begin public ministry as vowed religious.
After that year was done, I felt called, so I took my first vows, which were like temporary vows. So you take the vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience for 3 years. And then after those 3 years are done, you can renew or you can profess them perpetually, like for forever.
So if we think sort of in terms of a romantic relationship, you go through the period of dating and engagement and then marriage. Taking what's called temporary vows is that period of engagement.
So in a way, like I kind of took the lease out on the house for 3 years. And in those 3 years, I was studying at St. Mary's Seminary, getting my master's in divinity. And then I was also taking a year to kind of like an internship year, a pastoral year, to work at a Basilian high school up in Toronto, Canada. Through all those experiences, when I tell people about my vocation story, I tell them like there wasn't one light bulb moment. In many ways, it was a progressive thing. Little by little, I could see the signs of God calling me to the religious life and to the priesthood, especially in the community life, living with the Basilians. There was definitely moments where like things were tough and I was like, well, maybe I'm really not called to this. But consistently, either through working and ministry settings, like working at our high schools or living in community with the priest, I was affirmed in my discernment. And like, those are the moments where I was like, you know what? I really can see myself doing this for the rest of my life. I really see myself helping people in this way. As a member of a religious order, you have to be in perpetual vows before you get ordained. Mm-hmm. So I took perpetual vows. I professed poverty, chastity, and obedience for forever on May 17th. That was a Friday. On May 18th, the Saturday, I was ordained a deacon.
It's called the transitional diaconate. They're a deacon for a year assisting in a parish to learn sort of the ins and outs of parish ministry and service at the altar.
In that, like, I'm kind of getting my feet wet, starting to figure out how to like bless things, bless people, pray with people, and just journey with them through their highs and lows.
So in all, it's a long process, usually about 7 years of formation and prayer and ministry and learning before they are ordained as priests. So how did he decide to become a Basilian?
So what he said is that it was through a question that he posed to a priest.
I ended up asking a priest that question, and he was like, wherever you find God the most, that's where he's calling you to. So all the way through Catholic high school to Catholic university, I'm like, I'm finding God in my campus ministry, more in my schooling, in my education. And that's the whole basis of the Basilian way of life. Teach me goodness, discipline, and knowledge. Teach me. It's all about education and sharing Christ the educator with all, whether it be at the parish or at the university or high school level.
I think that image of Christ the educator is something that is really beautiful, because it shows how people in the religious life are seeking to emulate Christ there's orders who are dedicated to different aspects of his being or see different charisms, different fruits from his entire life. And the Basilians themselves have latched onto this idea of, I think, of Christ at 12 years old in the temple of sharing knowledge. And it's in that sharing of knowledge that they understand their faith. Deacon Eduardo was 2 months out from his ordination when like the world stopped.
Yeah. Actually, when everything started happening in the quarantine and everything, like we didn't really know what was going to happen with the ordination. So the ordination was set for May 23rd back in September.
And for a while, the date of his ordination was in jeopardy.
Because everything, as we're finding out with the like the quarantine situation and the virus, is just like it's week to week, day to day. Everything is just so up in the air and uncertain that there's an anxiety in the air. Like, how do we deal with this? We can't really control it.
There was questions as to whether they should postpone this.
But then they're also saying if we postpone it, like how long are we really going to postpone it for? Because everything's up in the air. I believe like the shelter in place or the stay-at-home order was in place for like 2 or 3 weeks and then they extended it. So what would happen if they keep on extending it? They came to the conclusion that it's better to have something small right now rather than keep on waiting for a date in the unforeseeable future.
Rather than just waiting out to see what happens, they've decided let's make you a priest, right? Let's ordain you and we'll just do it following all our social distancing norms, right? So he's only allowed to have 10 people there. That includes the people participating in the mass.
So it was definitely like what's completely essential and then like how do we work up from there? So from the choir and all the music stuff, we kind of whittled it down to a pianist who can also play the organ and a cantor, so somebody to kind of lead the singing. We also said, well, we have a photographer and a videographer, so this way we can make sure that everybody sees the pictures and at least we can get a live stream going and have people participate that way. Of course, we have to have the bishop and I have to have at least one priest there. And we're going to have an altar server or a deacon there as well, and myself and my parents, and that's pretty much 10.
So when I was talking to Deacon Eduardo about his ordination mass, it got me thinking, like, what even happens in an ordination mass? Like, what are the things to look out for? What is going on? What does it mean?
There are a few really beautiful rituals that are part of this mass. So first, before the ordination itself, the deacon will lay prostrate right before the altar, sort of the ultimate symbol of prayer and humility. And as he does that, the litany of saints is either sung or recited. So we invoke the saints to pray with us for the men becoming priests, just as we invoked the saints to pray with us at our baptisms when we became Christians. And from there, he'll receive the laying on of hands. That laying on of hands has happened from Peter and the apostles to their successors and their successors to every priest in the Catholic Church. And Deacon Eduardo will have that same laying on of hands that initiated with Peter at his ordination. And then after that, the bishop will say a prayer of consecration. That's the form of the sacrament, that prayer and those words. So together, the laying on of hands and those words are what will make Deacon Eduardo a priest. And then his hands will be anointed with sacred chrism. It's like chrism that smells super awesome after baptism confirmation. It's the same chrism that will be used to anoint his hands, in particular because those hands are how he will bless both bread and wine at the altar and any prayer of blessing that he offers in his life as a priest, in his life and ministry as a priest. There are some special indulgences attached to first blessing, so it's really exciting to be able to ask a newly ordained priest with freshly anointed hands to say a prayer of blessing over you.
It's exciting because in the midst of all this darkness, all this craziness, like there's that little light of hope, of joy, of something we can look forward to for him.
So after he's ordained, what's his next move? Like what happens from there?
So he already has orders from the Basilians as to where he's going to go next.
The plan moving forward was that I was going to move up to Rochester, New York, either in June or July. And so that's the tentative plan right now, barring like anything else that might happen. So I would be working up in Rochester, New York at St. John Fisher College with one other Basilian in campus ministry. So I was supposed to be specifically like a chaplain for athletics, working with the different athletic teams there, and working to facilitate things in campus ministry between like service projects and the athletic teams.
Deacon Eduardo will be ordained to the priesthood on Saturday, May 23rd. You can watch the live stream of the liturgy on our Facebook page at Celt Campus Min. And he'll also be saying a mass for the UST community at the Chapel of St. Basil on Sunday, May 24th. That will be live streamed on our Facebook page as well.
All right, so we're now at part three, and this is Who's That Saint? So one of the things that we wanted to do is share a saint with y'all that maybe you never heard about, or if you have heard about it, just share a weird, interesting story about a saint. And the one that we picked for today was Saint Moses the Black. If you've heard of him, that's awesome. If you haven't, even better, because I didn't really know anything about this person until I started doing some research. I Googled interesting saint stories, and this is one of the ones that popped up. So I was like, okay, I'll check this out and see what this guy's all about. So Saint Moses the Black, he was a 4th century monk, and he basically lived a life. He was a slave for a little bit and then ended up leaving slavery because he was accused of stealing and murdering someone, which I thought was pretty interesting. And after that ended up happening, he became a leader of a gang of bandits, and he went out around the Nile, and they would go out and rob people and just kind of spread terror all over the place. And there's this one story that really stuck out to me. He went to go rob someone, and then the person, something got messed up. So he went back a couple days later, and he swam across an aisle with a knife in his mouth to go murder this guy. And he got all the way there, and the guy was not there. So he decided to just kill all the sheep and then swam back across the river. So I was like, this is a very odd guy, and how's this guy a saint at all? Then you start to find out why he's a saint later on in his life a little bit, because he ended up, once they started to figure out more about this guy, they started to do a manhunt for him, and he decided to go hide in a monastery. And when he was hiding in a monastery, he had this conversion, and he started to become a monk. And one of the unique stories that really, I think, is the one that a lot of people, if you know anything about him, is he beat the crap out of some people that were trying to rob the monastery, and he brought them to the chapel in front of the monks, and he was like, what should I do with them? Because he knew that he probably shouldn't kill them. The monks were like, forgive them and let them go. And that sense of forgiveness and mercy actually converted the robbers all over to join the monastery as well. So it's a very interesting story to learn about the Saint Moses the Black. And the other thing too that I read about, he has this struggle, this internal struggle about not being perfect enough. And there's this little story that I found, and it was basically saying that a monk took him up to the roof of the monastery, and they went outside to see the dawn's the sun rising through the dawn. And the monk said, this is his quote, is that like, the sun takes over the darkness slowly. It doesn't happen instantly. And that's kind of like the metaphor that he used for him with like his conversion and how that should look, how it's going to look for him. It's not going to happen instantly for you to have this conversion that takes over like a bright light. It's like a slow rising of the sun that takes over slowly, but it does eventually take over completely. So I thought that was a really beautiful imagery to just kind of imagine how our life and how we're trying to work toward heaven. So that's Saint Moses the Black. If you haven't heard of him, learn more about him. Seems like a cool guy. So thank you on that one. If you made it this far, thank you for sticking with us. This whole project is a labor of love, but we want to hear from y'all. What are the things you are discerning in life? What topics would you like us to cover in future episodes? Let us know. Hit us up on social at Celt Campus Min on Instagram and our Facebook page. Share this with your friends, family, coworkers, classmates, that one person who is not really your friend, but is always around, God is telling you to be a little bit more charitable to them. And a special thanks to Deacon Eduardo. We ask that you say some special prayers for him as he approaches his ordination, and congratulations. You've been listening to Q2 with JC. I'm Max Linville, and until next time, peace out.